people are right behind you, Mike. The mics are live. All right, are we, actually, hang on, let me, can I just remind everybody to turn your cell phones off or on to vibrate if need be? Yep, see, I'm the worst one. All right, what do you say? Are we ready to go?
Sure.
All right, we're gonna get started. I don't have a gavel to bang or anything. I think we're all right with that. You are all so far away. I'm just going to stand up because you're so far away I can barely see you. We're going to get started with the first public hearing for the Commission on Enhancing Agency Outcomes. Can you all hear me? Okay. My name is Gail Schlossberg. I'm a state senator from Milford Orange in West Haven, and I am the co-chair, along with Representative Jamie Spallone, of the Commission on Enhancing Agency Outcomes. And as you all know, we're in a serious budget crisis, and the state, like many other states, is trying to find ways to address that budget crisis and still continue to deliver the quality services that we've all come to depend upon. The purpose of this commission is to do neither of the things we normally talk about, which is either cutting spending or raising taxes. We're actually talking about something different. Our purpose is to have a better government, do government better at a better price, and look at, we are charged through legislation to actually determine where are the redundancies, what's inefficient about our state government, and how can we make our state government work better for the people in the state of Connecticut so that every dollar we do spend, we spend wisely, and that through this process we will help address our budget deficit. And so I'm delighted to be here. To my left, I've got Mike Cicchetti, who is the Deputy Secretary of the Office of Policy Management. I'm also joined by Representative Craig Miner and Representative John Hetherington. So we're delighted to have you here. Mr. Chairman, would you have anything else you'd like to say?
Very briefly, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be here in New Haven and listen to citizens and people who are interested in their government explain how we might enhance the outcomes of our government agencies and improve and streamline government. And I see this as an historic opportunity that only comes around once every generation or two, and we should look at it not simply as a budget crisis, but in this realm as an opportunity to improve the delivery of government services to the residents of the state of Connecticut. Thank you for being here.
Okay. I'd also just like to echo that. Thank you all for being here this evening. We really appreciate it. Democracy works best when we all participate. So with that, we do have a number of people signed up, and we're going to ask you just to, where are we going to have people stand? Oh, over here. We're just going to ask people to come up to the microphone and please state your name and your address just very clearly so we have it for the record. And then whatever you have to say is we're delighted to hear. So the first person on the list is Helen Higgins. Good evening, Helen, and thank you for being here. Right ahead.
Good evening. My name is Helen Higgins. I am Executive Director of the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation. I live at 652 Nut Plains Road, Guilford, Connecticut. Good evening, Senator Schlossberg, Representative Spallone. Spallone. Yes, I'm so sorry. The next one in line. I am here to talk about the proposed merger of the Commission on Culture and Tourism into the Department of Economic and Community Development. I am aware that you've probably received, I'm trying to stay on mic here, you've received written materials from members of the Commission. I serve as an ex officio member of that Commission by virtue of my being executive director of the Connecticut Trust. I am also obviously a partner with the Historic Preservation Division of that commission, and I have been in my role for 11 years working with what we call the State Historic Preservation Office. And it is to the point of the State Historic Preservation Office and the impact of this proposed merger on that federally designated unit of state government that I want to speak tonight. I want to focus my comments in two areas. One, on the very negative impact such a merger will have on the state's ability to facilitate the influx of American Recovery and Reinvestment Act funds. Two, on the potential for loss of federal funds that come to the state to support the State Historic Preservation Office, more than $1 million. Six federally funded staff will be eliminated in the merger. And a third point that I don't have written here but will come up later is about a problem of conflict of interest within having the State Historic Preservation Office in the Department of Economic and Community Development. Just some background here. The State Historic Preservation Office reviews all federally funded and licensed projects for their effects on historic buildings, historic districts, and archaeological sites as part of environmental impact analysis for the projects. Staff members are specially certified for this work. Under federal law, no federally supported project in Connecticut can proceed without the review of what we call the SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office. This is as per the National Historic Preservation Act of 1966. Under federal law, all stimulus dollars directed at construction projects will require SHPO review. This law was reaffirmed recently in the light of ARRA. The workload for the SHPO project review, currently at approximately 1,500 reviews a year, has already begun to increase and can be expected to increase dramatically in the near future as federal stimulus funds for construction come into Connecticut. In fact, more staff, unfortunately not fewer, is really needed to fulfill the requirements on the use of the federal stimulus money. Transportation projects, housing projects, even the newly alive charged cult rehabilitation project, the most major historic preservation project in this state, will stall in their tracks with no SHPO or only a skeletal staff. In order for Connecticut to use stimulus funds expeditiously or at all, the state needs to maintain or even increase its ability to conduct efficient project review. Risking a loss of recognition by the Park Service of the Connecticut SHPO will effectively stop the flow of stimulus dollars for construction projects. And I can explain that concept as I go along. I want to go to point two. Under state law, construction, repair, maintenance projects generated by the Department of Economic and Community Development are subject to regulatory review of the SHPO. This is the Connecticut Environmental Policy Act, Section 22A, 1A3, A4. This means that the SHPO, if merged into DECD, would be reviewing for compliance to regulations the projects of its proposed parent agency. This easily could result in a conflict of interest as defined by the National Park Service and lead to the loss of federal funds for the SHPO office. Three times in the past 35 years, there have been attempts to merge the SHPO into the Department of Economic and Community Development. These attempts failed mainly on this issue of conflict of interest. The National Park Service has warned the state in the past of this potential conflict and loss of recognition and funds. And in addition, I think the way I understand it, the merger proposes the elimination of six federally funded SHPO positions in order to sustain kind of a skeletal State Historic Preservation Office staff that may meet the federal requirements of the titles, architectural historian, archaeologist, and so on, but it may not meet the need to do the Section 106 reviews, which are the federal reviews on the stimulus projects. Burying the State Historic Preservation Office in DECD with a skeleton staff, I say doesn't save a dime. I can't prove it, but and presents the real possibility of loss of federal funds from two sources, from the ARRA-directed stimulus dollars and from the National Park Service. And then I just want to add that third point, the very important point about conflict of interest.
Okay. Any questions?
Thank you very much for your testimony. I have just a couple of questions for you. One is the the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation, then, I'm not the Connecticut Trust for Historic Preservation, excuse me, the State Historic Preservation Office, which you've referred to as SHPO, I think, during your testimony.
Yes, right.
That's currently housed in Culture and Tourism?
It is. It's called, within the Division of Historic Preservation and Museums, the historic preservation component is essentially, I think, all but two positions are federally funded positions.
I see. Okay. And then your organization is a private nonprofit, I assume?
We were created by a special act of the General Assembly in 1975, but we are the statewide nonprofit for historic preservation.
And do you receive any state or federal dollars?
We receive state money.
And how do you interact with the State Historic Preservation Office? What kind of contacts do you have?
We interact daily with them. We supplement their work. We really are the ones who go out in the field before they do. We work with communities. We help them with, you know, preservation issues. We also give grants out for what are called pre-development, whereas the state gives out the bricks and mortar money. We have field workers who work with community members.
And lastly, the map is very interesting. That has the
That's the Connecticut Trust map.
Right.
What are
the purple designates easements, and in parentheses inspections. What is that?
An easement is a preservation restriction on the facade of a National Register listed houses, and we at the Connecticut Trust have the ability to hold easements in the state.
Oh, that's very interesting. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Any other questions from the committee? Oh. Okay.
Sure.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
Please. Thank
okay.
you. Yeah. Good evening.
Representative Weiner.
In an attempt for us to try and meet some goal of making Connecticut's government process more efficient, is there a more logical connection to another agency that you might suggest if we were to follow your logic that DECD is not the right match?
Well, the logic, which I think someone later is going to mention, is this particular office was independent, as you may remember, in 2000 and up to 2002, 2003. It was merged into Commission on Culture and Tourism. That actually has been a very logical merger. In the Division of Historic Preservation, they also have a museum section, so that sort of fits with the tourism, the culture, and so on. In other states, you will find, I mean, yes, there are sometimes that these have been merged into the Economic and Community Development, but I think in New York they're in the Park Service, but we don't have, well, they would be like DEP, I guess. But it still comes up against this issue of conflict of interest in review. And I have a letter from 2002 from the Park Service when a merger was being proposed that suggested the conflict of interest would be perceived. And I really think that it's with this federal stimulus money, this is really when you come into a problem. But now going back to where would be a better fit, well, a good fit is if you find that culture and tourism actually functions efficiently, then that's the best fit. I hate to see historic preservation sort of dragged along. I mean, I think that, from my point of view and from the point of view of many people in this state, historic preservation is a key tool to our recovery. We don't really put enough emphasis on that. We don't really, we don't seem to fully understand that. But we really can't afford in this economic climate to diminish the important role of investing in our historic resources. And I include our urban houses, our mills and so on. This is a huge mistake, I think, to look at the field that would be most important for our recovery and is important for our quality of life here, in other words, our historic character, to be lost in DECD. The old historical commission used to be in the state library for administrative purposes, but they were independent. I'm sure I'd love to talk to you, you know, with more thought about, you know, where else this might go. But I don't, again, I don't want to see the Historic Preservation Office sort of like this little lone character. Where are we going to stick it? I think it's got to have a real presence in state government. I think of the five principles of smart growth that the governor has enunciated. I think the fifth one, I don't think that means it's the lowest one, but it says we must invest in our historic resources.
I don't disagree with you.
I know you don't.
But I feel some need to point out that facing the kind of deficit that we're facing, I'm not so sure we can afford to continue to do government the way we're doing.
Well,
and so I think part of our charge is trying to take a look at different processes in the state of Connecticut and try and figure out whether there's a more cost-effective way to do it by and not having it be the traipse along agency or entity. I don't think any of us want to just dismantle Connecticut government for the sake of dismantling it. I think we're interested in trying to find out if there are some similarities, some matches, so to speak, where we can gain efficiencies through the process and thereby have everything be sustained. But my fear is that at the end of some time here, if we don't find some mechanism to achieve some savings, I don't think historic preservation will be the only thing we may not be able to afford to do.
Well, but just remember, the historic preservation piece is mainly federally funded. I mean, that I think is what's important. Is it's not to eliminate to eliminate six federally funded positions basically just sort of is a way of you're just going to put the federal you're going to now use federal money to enhance the budget of DECD. So it's not, you know, to eliminate or to, you know, bring it down to a skeleton isn't saving the state any money, I guess is.
And I appreciate the fact that you're focusing on a proposal that was made during the budget process. I think our charge is something a little different, which is to step back and just take a look at this maybe with a fresh set of eyes, not necessarily that combination. Not necessarily any combination, but in fact, if we had the ability to take a clean piece of paper and redraw how we established agencies in the state of Connecticut, what would be the way we would do it? And
well,
I'm not so sure we would redraw Connecticut the way we've done it if we had that clean piece of paper.
I would have the Commission on Historic Preservation, and under it, I would have economic and community development as the key, as, you know, that's what I would have.
Touche.
That's efficient.
Touche.
Helen, you made your points very well. Are there any further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Our next speaker is Rachel Gibson. Good evening, Rachel. Thank you for being here.
Good evening. My name is Rachel Gibson. I live at 50 Catherine Drive, Hampden, Connecticut, 06514. I'm not a good public speaker, but I just wanted to start by saying I'm from the University of Connecticut and at School of Social Work, and I also work at a homeless shelter. And I was going to say, with the bleak state of the current economy, now is the time to reevaluate how state resources are being spent in Connecticut. So I heard about this. Sorry.
You're fine. Take a deep breath and just talk to us. We're just regular people.
I heard about this today, and I thought it would be a good time to come out and talk about one way of reevaluating how agency outcomes can better be spent is to think about the homeless population and what they're costing the state. I've heard many stories from homeless people, just from working at the shelter, and it's crazy just to think about what they go through every day. There's one woman that was on my. I'm actually. I work on a transitional housing floor, and she just got bumped down from transitional housing down to emergency shelter. And she's carrying her suitcase, a big suitcase, like maybe the size of this podium, a little bit smaller. And she's carrying this around every day with all her stuff in it. And it just breaks my heart. Like, I go down and I talk to her and just to see how she's doing. But she's had a very hard time finding housing, and she's been without housing for over 2 years. According to the Connecticut Coalition on Homelessness, it is estimated that 33,000 people in Connecticut are homeless in this state, and about 13,000 of whom are children. The shortage in affordable housing, the increase in poverty, mental illness, and substance abuse are some factors that contribute to this problem. According to the Connecticut Point in Time Count of 2009, almost 4,366 people in Connecticut experienced homelessness on the evening of January 3, 2008. There was a study done by a guy named Dr. Dennis P. Colhane from the Penn School of Policy Practice that found a person experiencing chronic homelessness costs an average of at least $40,000 in public resources each year. However, if that person were in supportive housing, it would only cost about $40 per day or $24,000 annually. Temporary housing for the homeless and crisis services such as emergency room treatment, substance abuse, mental health care, police, and court costs can range from $35,000 to $150,000 per person per year. In contrast, giving a homeless person a permanent place to live and the support services they need to keep from ending up back on the street costs between $13,000 and $25,000 per person per year. So it is clear that everybody loses out by not addressing this issue. The thing that's going on now is that we're managing this issue, but we're not looking at it in a way to eliminate it. Currently, there are 10-year plans that are being adopted all around the state. And I think in order for this plan to work, it's vital that they start sharing information with what's working in these different parts of the state. According to Connecticut Coalition and Homelessness, West Chandler County in New York has reduced family homelessness by 57% over the past 4 years. Springfield, Massachusetts, and Denver, Colorado have also seen dramatic decreases in their homeless population just by the way that they've implemented their 10-year plan. Basically just targeting their resources and being more focused with how the money is spent, and also being more accountable with what they're doing with their money. Also, they're using efforts to raise awareness of the issue and also raise money. In Denver, Colorado, he raised like $38 million just in homeless resources to fight this issue, and it's working. So I just wanted to say that I applaud this committee, and I hope that this information is helpful if you don't already know about it. And also that we'll be able to target spending more effectively to eliminate this problem and not manage it. So I don't know. That's it. Thank you.
We appreciate you being here, and I think you make a lot of very good points. Are there questions or comments from the members of the commission? Mm-hmm. Yes, Representative Spillane.
Thank you very much for your testimony. As you can see, once you got going, you were fine. It's not that hard. You're a good public speaker.
No, I'm not.
You're fine. I guess I take away from your presentation that we are spending more money managing homelessness through social programs, through the criminal justice system, through emergency room visits than we would be if we addressed the problem of homelessness in terms of providing more supportive housing and delivering services in a smarter way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Exactly.
Very good. You're right on target with our charge too, so thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony. Thank you.
And also, I'll be working with the Connecticut Coalition on Homelessness next year, so hopefully we'll be able to, I know proposals are being submitted in New Haven, so hopefully we'll be able to figure something out as to how we can spend money more effectively.
And we might see
and eliminate this problem.
Capital then, if you're working with them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay. Our next speaker is Larry Bingaman.
Good
Good evening.
Good evening. My name is Larry Bingaman, and I reside at 30 Avalon Drive in Milford, Connecticut. And I am here this evening on behalf of the Regional Water Authority and as well as the Connecticut Waterworks Association. As you know, the Regional Water Authority serves about a population of about 400,000 people in 15 towns in Connecticut. And the Connecticut Waterworks Association is an association of public water supply utilities that serves a population of about 2.5 million people throughout Connecticut. I would like to thank you, Senator Schlossberg, Representative Spallone, and members of the commission for the opportunity to speak tonight and to address an issue that is very important, I think, to the state as well as to the water utility industry, and that's the streamlining of some of the government processes that I'll touch on. I might point out that we submitted our testimony electronically, and there are links in there to some of the reports to which I will be referring tonight as well. I would like to offer you some thoughts tonight on the need to streamline oversight of water resource management and to reduce some of the overlap and redundancies among state agencies that we believe would promote efficiency in water supply management. Currently, responsibility for water resource management is vested in four different state agencies, which includes the State Department of Public Health, the Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Public Utility Control, and the Office of Policy and Management. The water industry and various environmental stakeholders have long supported efforts to centralize overlapping agency oversight of water resource management under one agency to improve water resource management and provide better guidance to the state in making decisions concerning water allocation. In the last three decades, there have been several studies that have concluded Connecticut must address the overlapping regulatory oversight of water resources. And I'd like to cite some of the highlights of those studies. In 1982, a water resource task force concluded that Connecticut's programs for water resource planning, management, and allocation needed to be revised. Almost 20 years later, the State Department of Environmental Protection issued its own report, which also cited lack of coordination and integration of water resource programs as a major barrier to effective regulation of water resources. In 2002, an interim report of the Water Planning Council concluded that, quote, the allocation process could be more efficient and effective if the regulatory structure was modified and certain interagency responsibilities were merged under a single umbrella. While the creation of the Water Planning Council, created by the legislature in 2001, has provided a mechanism to improve collaboration among the stakeholders, define the issues affecting the state's water resources, and report on possible strategies for addressing concerns, the council is not authorized or empowered to make and be held accountable for decisions that cut across the four separate agencies responsible for water policies. The problem remains that the four agencies simply have different objectives and have continued to undermine the state's ability to develop and implement a comprehensive water resource management and allocation plan. In 2003, the legislature's Program Review and Investigations Committee prepared a report which included in its findings, quote, the state's current water resource planning process is spread among several state agencies, primarily focus on water supply for drinking water purposes and does not fully integrate planning for all water uses. To address this concern, the report recommended that the Water Planning Council establish a working group of various stakeholders to study the issue regarding water resource management and allocation and planning and make recommendations for revised management to oversee and coordinate water resource matters. To date, no such working group has been convened by the Water Planning Council, although the Office of Policy and Management recommends that such a group be convened in its report on the study of water resource planning to the state. We believe that if certain agency functions were merged under one entity, such as OPM, Connecticut would be better positioned to develop and implement a comprehensive water resources management and allocation plan, as well as eliminate duplicative processes. This would help reduce state costs and costs borne by the regulated community and residents of the state. And I'd like to highlight a few examples of where overlapping oversight of water resources creates some issues and impede the development of effective water management. One, water supply plans. Under the current law, several agencies are involved in that process, and certain utilities are required to prepare and file water supply plans with the State Department of Public Health, the Department of Public Utility Control, in concurrence with the State Department of Environmental Protection. In addition, copies of the plan must be filed with the Office of Policy and Management. So as a result, each agency must devote considerable staff and resources to reviewing a water supply plan to determine compliance with discrete statutes affecting water resources. This is clearly inefficient and a process that results in anywhere between 2 to 3 year delay in approving the water supply plan. There's also permitting issues where water utilities and other water users are subject to extensive permitting requirements. And under the current regulatory structure, if a user diverts more than 50,000 gallons per day from a source of supply, it must obtain a diversion permit from DEP. DEP bases its approval on an extensive review of several factors, including the impact of such diversion on the environment or aquatic life. However, it does not consider the public's need for a safe and adequate public water supply in its determination, a factor that is squarely within the purview of the State Department of Public Health. If responsibility for these activities were vested in a single entity, there would be greater coordination and consistency in the review process, an application would be approved quicker, and there would be more predictability in the decision-making process. And finally, I'd like to comment on the proposed stream flow regulations, which recognizes that there needs to be a greater need for water coordination of water resources, and is underscored by DEP's recent efforts to promulgate these regulations. Despite clear statutory direction that such regulations should be balanced to reflect the needs of the environment and aquatic life, as well as the needs of public health and safety, stakeholders have had to keep reminding the agency of the importance of ensuring that such regulations should not negatively impact a water utility's safe yield and margin of safety, which would jeopardize the public health and safety of Connecticut citizens. Also, too, in drought management, there is a critical water resource issue that is shared by, again, multiple agencies: the Office of Policy and Management, the Department of Environmental Protection, the State Department of Public Health, and the Department of Public Utility Control. These are just some examples of my testimony that highlight the overlap that could be eliminated by combining the oversight of water resources under one agency, and we believe that OPM would be the appropriate agency to consolidate that. The Connecticut Water Works Association would be pleased to provide the committee with more information regarding this issue, and while CWWA is not in a position to provide an estimate of the potential cost savings by combining the agency functions, it is apparent in the examples that provided that the efficiencies could be achieved and we believe could reduce costs as well. Again, thank you for the opportunity to provide comments tonight.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Larry. I think you're also right on target. This is exactly the type of information we're looking for in terms of overlapping and redundancies. Just some simple questions. In terms of the water supply plans that you have to submit, and you know, one to DPH, one to DPUC, and one for DEP, and then the entire plan to OPM, are those different plans that you're submitting, or are they all the same plan and then each agency reviews it on their own?
It is the same plan. It is submitted to each agency, and they review it on their own within their particular perspective. The Department of Public Health is the approving agency, but they must receive the concurrence of the Department of Environmental Protection. And the Department of Environmental Protection will look at it in terms of what the projected water supply needs are, and they may not agree with a proposed source of supply, so they could well hold up their concurrence on the plan, and that's what adds the 2 to 3 years to the process. OPM also looks at it from their standpoint as well and provides comments on the plan, and the DPUC may provide comments depending on the utility that submits it.
How often do you have to submit a water supply plan?
The water supply plan is a 50-year plan that is updated on about every 5 years.
So it's every 5 years you have to go through this process.
And it's not an inexpensive process. It's usually somewhere in the five-figure category, anywhere between the low five figures up to the high five figures, depending on the how complicated the utilities operations are and its sources of supply.
And if that process was streamlined, would the ratepayers see a reduction in their rate as a result of that?
Well, as you well know, in the rate-making process, the expense of operating the utility, which includes environmental compliance, goes into those rates. So certainly, over time, that would help achieve some efficiencies and some cost reduction. But I think it's more than just the water supply planning process. When you see all of the overlap and the redundancies, and you get different opinions on different subject matters, whether it's diversion permits or whether it's on something like stream flow regulations, there is a cost associated with that, that each agency looks at it from their particular point of view. That's, I think, where the long-term savings might come into play there.
Okay.
On a much broader issue than just water supply plans.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I think, though, for our purposes, to really get a handle on the specifics that you're talking mm-hmm. about and, you know, what sort of a solution makes sense to meet the regulatory needs
right.
of the state and the oversight needs of the state, but to come up with a more streamlined process, sometimes we have to ask a little bit more detailed question than we might otherwise like to be able to be asking. But, for example, with a diversion permit, is that something that goes, first you have a permit that goes to DEP and then it goes, after that it goes to DPH?
Well, the DEP is the agency that approves the diversion permit, but you could be caught into a situation where the health department is ordering you to increase your supply so that you meet their safe margin requirements, but you could be held up getting a source of supply because you're not complying with the regulatory requirements under the diversion program.
When you're working with those state agencies, do you work with a number of different people within the state agency, or do you usually, is there one person?
You work with different staff members, depending on what the issue is.
Depending upon the issue. But let's say you were going for a diversion permit. Would there be one person at DEP that you would see and then one person at DPH?
There would be usually a section, but yes, there's usually a designated staff member that handles those. And that's also part of the issue. Sometimes staff gets backed up, too, depending on the workload.
Okay. All right. Are there other questions? Yes, Representative Spallone.
Yes. Thank you for your testimony. In thinking about this over the years, have you ever thought about the idea of an umbrella agency concerning natural resources? I know that idea has been bandied about in the legislature before, so maybe it would cover water supply, timber, fisheries, quarries, and other things like that, since I'm sure all of those overlap similar to water.
That is something that has been talked about. We're not suggesting that tonight in our testimony simply because we didn't want to create yet again another agency when the goal was to try to streamline things. So we were trying to make offer a suggestion within the existing government structure, but that's something that could certainly be looked at.
Sometimes streamlining can occur through taking pieces out of that are spread across state government and putting them in one home. But I appreciate that. Thank you again for your testimony.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Minor.
Thank you. Water hasn't changed much in 25 years. We've known each other for quite a while.
Yes.
Through my former job with the town of Litchfield. And I, piggybacking on Jamie's question, are there states throughout the country that may manage this issue better than we currently do?
I am directly familiar with two states, having worked in Massachusetts and New Hampshire, where they have consolidated their water supply regulation under one agency. And so you dealt with one agency in terms of any quality or quantity matters. And it gave an opportunity to have consistent interpretation of the rules. You didn't get caught into a situation where one agency would to tell you to do something and another one might contradict that. So in those instances, that at least I have personally experienced, it's been a much more efficient process.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Hetherington.
Thank you. Is there a history to this? How did it come to be that regulation of our water resources is so dispersed as it is now? Where did it all start? Was there a single agency once? Or?
Well, I can't really address that with a lot of accuracy. But it seems like that the Department of Environmental Protection started out regulating the quality, the quantity side of it, public health being concerned with the quality issue. As you know, they are the state primacy agency and are, and therefore is the agency on behalf of the Environmental Protection Agency to regulate the health effects of water. So I suspect that probably historically DEP was given the charge because of their direct involvement in ensuring the environment is protected. DPH was given the primacy responsibility under the EPA Safe Drinking Water Act, and probably the two functions just were kept separate because of the particular charges of the agency.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Good.
We appreciate you being
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Nancy Ahern.
I'm Nancy Ahern. I live at 295 West Rock Avenue in New Haven. Good evening, members of the Commission on Enhancing Agency Outcomes. Thank you for this opportunity to address you here in New Haven. You have the daunting task of determining efficiency and accountability in state government as it pertains to various plans to merge agencies.